Welcome to the Last Round MMA.
The guy's never beaten me. In order to be the champion, you have to beat the champion.
A podcast for the MMA fan.
Imagine that. Look at everybody up here. They're all dressed like me. They're all trying to talk like me. They're all trying to be me.
Bringing you in-depth interviews and more from across the MMA world.
This is like pride. You know, everybody's here. I feel great. And, you know, I can't wait. Saturday night, I'm going to crush this guy hype.
Are you ready? Let's start the show.
Welcome to the Last Round MMA. And today we have Mark the Shark Irwin. Thanks for joining me, Mark.
Good to be here, mate. Thanks for having me.
Right, this is going to be a good one. So let's just jump straight in. So where did you grow up and how did you get started in combat sports?
Well, I was born in California in San Francisco, and I've grown up all over California, everywhere from San Diego to San Francisco, LA. These days I'm in Huntington Beach, Surf City, in Orange County, California. I couldn't be happier to be here. I got started in combat sports kind of late in life. I started boxing when I was 23 years old. I had my first amateur fight when I was 24. I won by knockout. I started competing regularly throughout my 20s, ended up winning a couple of California State Boxing Tournament Championships with USA Boxing's amateur program. At that point, I decided to retire from amateur boxing, and I started working as an official for USA Boxing, judging and refereeing local fights. And I did that for about a year. I worked 20 events, and it was a great experience, and I definitely learned a lot about, you know, that side of the game. And it was right about that point in time that the pandemic started, and everything got canceled, everything shut down. So all the gyms were closed. I couldn't train, you know, clients and fighters. I couldn't work as an official for USA Boxing. But they were having professional boxing matches in Mexico that were being sanctioned. And being in Southern California, it's only about an hour and a half drive from where I live. So we decided to get in shape and start boxing in Mexico. So we had a couple fights, and we won all those. And it was about that time that I started watching bare knuckle boxing, and I became a big fan of the sport. And I noticed that BKFC was having open tryouts in Tampa, Florida, which is on the other side of the country. So I decided to buy a plane ticket and fly out and try out. And BKFC ended up signing me and giving me a bout agreement. And the rest is history. So we won our BKFC debut. And then we recently signed a deal with BYB to come over and compete in the Trigon, where we won the Knockout of the Night award. And we're able to come to terms on a long-term deal. So we're excited to be with this organization long-term. I was really looking forward to fighting on the next card, August 27th. But unfortunately, I had to pull out due to an injury. So we have surgery scheduled in 8 days from today. So we're going to have him clean up my knee a little bit, and then we'll spend the rest of the year rehabbing and getting back in shape, and then hoping to get back in the Trigon and fighting under the bright lights for BYB the beginning of 2023.
What was the reason that you first stepped into the boxing gym?
You know, I was running track and field in college. I did the 1 and the 2 mile race, and I was a decent runner and a good athlete. But my track and field career was coming to an end, and some friends of mine had been taking boxing lessons in a garage, and they invited me along, and I beat up all my friends on the first day. I had fun doing it, so I decided to start training regularly, and I fell in love with the sport. Had my first amateur fight within a year of beginning training, and I've been doing it ever since, and that was about 10-11 years ago.
I was getting punched in the face for the first time because, you know, most people, like when you go to a boxing gym, people come in, and then when they get punched in the face, quite often you don't see them again.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's definitely a shock to the system. I think like anything, your body will build a tolerance to things the more you subject yourself to it. So if you never go running and I make you go for a 5 mile run with me, it's going to kick your ass. But if you run all the time, that's easy. Right. And I think the same is true for whether it's lifting weights or getting punched in the face, your body will adapt and your body will get used to it. So like anything, you know, it definitely takes some getting used to. I think I probably take punches better than most, which is why I decided to stick with the sport and I'm still doing it here today. But, you know, I still don't like getting punched in the face by any means. I'm trying to stay pretty and handsome. So trying to get in and out of there unscathed as best as possible.
So when you started boxing, was it just for fitness? And then you decided like, hey, I'm kind of good at this. Let's start amateur and then eventually turn pro. Or what did you go into it, you know, thinking, you know what, I want to be a combat sports fighter professionally?
Yeah, you know, I didn't have any plans of getting into it seriously. I grew up watching the sport. Me and my dad used to watch boxing matches when I was a kid growing up. And in high school, I became a big fan of the UFC and MMA. But really, I was just looking for something to do. Like I said, I finished my running career. And I was looking for another avenue to kind of work out and have fun. And my friends brought me along. And I realized I had some natural talent for the sport. And I took to it really quickly. And it wasn't before long that I made the decision that I was going to have an amateur fight. I just wanted to do one just for the fun of it and to kind of test myself, because I felt pretty confident that I could get in there and knock somebody out, because I had been knocking out a lot of people in the gym. And so I set out to have that one fight. I won the fight by knockout. And it was about that same time I actually got a job working as a boxing coach and a trainer at LA Boxing, which ended up getting bought out by UFC Gym. So I worked there, you know, and I liked working at the gym. I turned it into a full-time job, and I just kept competing because I had been, you know, working and working out in the gym. And it just, you know, kept going, and we're still here and we're still doing it. So it wasn't ever really my plan. It just kind of happened that way. It just kind of fell into place.
Any fighters that you enjoyed watching growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my dad had a great collection of VHS tapes that were all labeled and dated with famous fights all the way back to Rocky Marciano, to Ali versus Frazier, Foreman, all those guys, Marvelous Marvin, Sugar Ray, Thomas Hearns, Roberto Duran, all the way up to De La Hoya and Mike Tyson in the early 90s. But my favorite fighter to watch was always Marvelous Marvin. He, the first fight I ever watched, I was 5 years old, and I watched it with my dad. We watched the war between Marvelous Marvin and Thomas the Hitman Hearns, and it just blew me away. I thought it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And I became a huge Marvelous Marvin fan at 5 years old. My dad told me all about how he legally changed his name to Marvelous, which I thought was like the coolest thing ever. And he could do it all. He could punch with both hands, big power in both fists. He could switch stances. He's always coming forward. He could take a shot as well as anybody. And he always brought the action. And he's still one of my favorite fighters to this day. You know, so rest in peace, Marvelous Marvin.
I'm sad to say there's going to be people listening to this that are going to say, what's a VHS tape?
Yeah, I know. I'm dating myself.
So do you see anything in the way that you fight in him? Because I think sometimes just in any sport, when you watch someone, you kind of gather things that they do.
Sure. Absolutely. And I definitely try to emulate some of the things that he does. I don't switch stances. That's not something you'll ever see me do. But I am a come forward fighter with big power in both hands, as I've, you know, proven throughout my career to this point. I've scored knockouts with my right hand. I've scored knockouts with my left hand. You know, I've scored knockouts in my last three fights in a row. So the come forward power punching style is definitely something I try to emulate. You know, so he's definitely a big inspiration of mine. Prince Nassim Hamed is another one that, you know, I absolutely love and adore. And, I don't always so much try to box like him, but I like to take a lot of his bravado and his stage presence and swagger. A lot of the reason why I rock the leopard print trunks and the leopard hair is an ode to Prince Nassim. So he's another big inspiration of mine. Conor McGregor is one of my all-time favorite fighters. You know, so I try to take a little bit of everything from all my favorite fighters, but at the same time to maintain my own style and, you know, have my own, you know, look and technique and everything else.
So you were a two-time state champion as an amateur. eventually came back and decided to turn pro, and something that I can't wait to get to talk about. You turned pro in Mexico. So you must have some good stories from down there. I think you turned pro, was it at Big Punch?
I had my second fight at the Big Punch Arena. Actually, my first professional boxing match in Mexico, believe it or not, it was September 27th of 2020. So it was the heart of the pandemic. And I fought in the parking lot of a baseball stadium. They put the ring in the middle of the parking lot, and people would drive their car up to the ring and park in front of the ring, and people sat on top of their cars and watched the fights. It was absolutely crazy, right? It was a drive-in show for boxing because they wanted to have people socially distanced. So that was my first ever fight. And it was pretty wild and crazy, but it was a great experience. My second fight, like you mentioned, was in the Big Punch Arena, which was also a lot of fun. I got my first professional knockout at Big Punch Arena. Believe it or not, in that fight, actually, I ended up fighting a different opponent than I was scheduled to. And they didn't tell me. I didn't find out until afterwards. But my opponent actually weighed in two weight classes above me. I weighed in at 135. He weighed in at 152. So if you look at my BoxRec page, I actually have one junior middleweight fight by definition on my record, even though, you know, I weighed in at the lightweight limit. So you never know what you're going to get in Mexico. It's always a little bit goofy and kind of crazy when it comes to the fights down there. But it was great experience, and it definitely, you know, helped prepare me and give me the confidence to go forward with my bare knuckle career. So definitely was invaluable to my development as a fighter. And I have a lot of fond memories from my weekend staying down there in Rosarito and fighting in Mexico and all the fun that comes along with that.
So why you turn pro, you go 2-0 in Mexico, you make the most of the pandemic. Why the transition from boxing to BKFC after being so successful, you know, as a pro and as an amateur?
So, you know, I was 2-0 and looking to make my debut here in the States. And one day I started watching YouTube and bare knuckle boxing came on. So I watched the bare knuckle boxing match, and instantly YouTube just queues up another bare knuckle match, right? And then another, and then another, and another. I ended up watching about half a dozen different bare knuckle boxing matches. And after watching all these fights, I felt pretty confident that I could actually beat a lot of these guys, right? I was just watching the fights. It's no disrespect to any of them, but I know the quality of my ability and my talent. And I knew watching these guys that I could beat most of them, if not all of the fights that I watched. So it kind of planted a seed in my mind. And then the very next day I was looking on my phone and I saw that BKFC was having open tryouts, and it just kind of seemed like fate or destiny. And so I decided to buy a plane ticket and a hotel room. I flew out across the country. I showed up, you know, over 50 people were there and they gave out 5 contracts. I ended up getting one of them, and here we are. So, you know, it wasn't anything that I ever really set out to do. Again, it kind of all just came together on its own, like a lot of the other moments in my career. So,
for the people listening, Mark, just describe, you know, what happens on the tryouts. Is it interviews? Do you get in there and spar? What's the process?
Yeah, so we got there. It was a 4-hour workout. They had us do 15 minutes nonstop shadow boxing. Yeah, it's a long time. And then from there, we would do pad work with some of the BKFC fighters. They would hold pads for us, and the talent scouts would watch us on the pads. They'd watch us hit the heavy bags. They had a punch meter that would record the amount of pounds per, you know, square inch, how much force we're generating on our punch. And then they would do some select interviews with certain people. So I got selected to be interviewed. And that was pretty much it. It was a long day. It was a lot of fun and a great experience. I got to connect with a lot of really high level bare knuckle fighters in the game, and I had a blast. So, you know, it really only encouraged and motivated me that I was on the right path and headed where I was supposed to be.
And it was just a one fight contract?
Yes, sir. So I had a one fight contract. I won by knockout. And then I was supposed to have another bout January of this year. It fell through, and you know, I had trouble getting another bout scheduled, at which point BYB stepped in and made me a great offer. So we accepted, and I really couldn't be happier to be with BYB at this point. It's a real world-class organization. They've given me the full rockstar treatment and really made me feel like a part of the family. So I'm excited to be a part of the team there. And I was really looking forward to fighting at the Miami card in 4 weeks. You know, it's definitely a disappointment, but at the end of the day, it just motivates me to come back stronger. And I can't wait to get out there in the beginning of the year.
How was walking to the cage or the ring, you know, for the first time in BKFC?
Yeah, you know, it was definitely a moment for sure. I always kind of get tunnel vision when I'm walking out there. So I don't see much. I see the ring in front of me. I see the lights. But as far as the crowd and things like that, it kind of gets blocked out, if you will. I don't know. It must be part of the focus or the adrenaline or whatever it is. But it really is a pretty crazy feeling going out there with all the cameras on you and everybody's looking at you. I love it. You know, I love the attention, if you can't tell by the crazy hair and the tattoos and the colorful outfits and everything else. So I love it. I like having all the eyes on me, and I can't wait to get out there and do it again.
Any superstitions on fight day or fight week?
I'm not superstitious. I don't believe in superstition. So nothing like that. But I do like routine and I do like rituals. So one thing I really try to do is to have certain routines and certain rituals, because it makes me feel comfortable. You know what I mean? So like one thing that I like to do, the night before the fight, me and the team will go to a nice steakhouse in town and we'll get a real good meal. And I'll treat my coaches to, some T-bones, and we eat real well the night before. Other than that, not a whole lot.
Anything that runs through your mind, you know, you sat there, the cut man or your coach is putting those wraps on, and you know, now's the time. Like, you go into war. Like, what goes through your mind then?
I'm a real confident guy. I always have been, you know, so for me, I always am in a real positive mindset. I always feel good. I'm excited. If you saw me, you know, backstage in the locker room warming up, I'm back there singing and dancing and screaming and hyping up the rest of the locker room. You know, like I said, I like the attention and I like having, you know, all eyes on me. So I really thrive in that moment. And, you know, what people always tell me, oh, you look so calm out there. You look so relaxed. And I am, because I'm having fun and I'm doing what I want to be doing. So, you know, the moment before the moment, right? The moment before the fight is always some of my favorites, that build up and that anticipation.
One thing that you seem to be good at, and you kind of touched on it before, is that, you know, the promotion, the entertainment side of it, you kind of understand that it's a sport, but it's also probably an entertainment and a business first, right? Because they've got to make money or there's going to be no promotion. Is that something that you worked on, or is that something that just came natural to you?
Well, as a kid, I grew up watching pro wrestling, you know, Ric Flair and Hulk Hogan and all those guys. So I think I didn't realize it at the time, but it was kind of grooming me perfectly for the sport of boxing and bare knuckle. But yeah, you know, I certainly love that aspect of it too. I love talking on camera and hyping the fights up and all the media that comes along with it. I love doing podcasts with you guys, you know, so I do enjoy the process. I know some fighters are not keen on the media, aren't as in love with the camera as I am, but you know, that's part of it. And I enjoy all of it. So I love being a part of the promotion and helping to build a fight.
Do you rehearse stuff, like any put downs or shout outs or anything like that beforehand?
You know, I just kind of shoot from the hip. So I try not to overthink it or anything like that. I don't put too much behind it. I just say what's on my mind and, you know, speak how I feel.
When you transition from boxing into BKFC, has your training changed at all?
Yeah, it actually changed quite a bit. One of the biggest changes that we made from switching boxing to bare knuckle is I stopped training with a lot of boxers and I started working a lot more with MMA fighters because, one, the rule set is a little bit different. It allows for a lot of clinching and hitting in the clinch, a lot of like tie plum and things like that. So some of the techniques are a little bit more akin to MMA. And then also most of the bare knuckle fighters are actually professional MMA fighters. Professional boxers like myself are a little bit more rare in bare knuckle, especially here in the United States. So training with MMA guys, I think better adapted me to the style of punching, right? Because MMA guys don't box the same as boxers. The way that they throw their punches and their techniques is a little bit different. So working with them, we brought on Ian Uncle Creepy McCall, the former world champion and UFC star, who's my MMA coach and grappling coach and a good friend of mine. So bringing him onto the team has been a big part of the process as well. But other than that, you know, we're not sparring bare knuckle or anything crazy like that. I get asked that all the time. No, we don't spar bare knuckle. I still wear gloves. I still wear a helmet most of the time, you know.
Boxing gloves or MMA gloves?
Mostly boxing gloves. Sometimes, especially as we get closer to the fight, we will start to switch to the 4-ounce MMA gloves as it's a little bit more akin to a bare fist as opposed to a glove. But yeah, not as far as the actual training itself, you know, we still get our runs in, do our strength and conditioning, sparring, bag work, mitt work, all that stuff. But the training partners have changed and adding more Muay Thai and adding more jiu-jitsu and wrestling, especially Greco-Roman wrestling, to my training regimen as well, so that I'm better prepared for fighting in that clinch.
And then is it a little bit quicker because of the shorter rounds?
I mean, it's quicker for a lot of reasons. In BYB, we're doing 3-minute rounds, whereas BKFC does 2-minute rounds. So the pace is a little bit different. But the big difference that I noticed as far as speed is concerned, not wearing a glove on your hand really changes how fast the punch comes in, right? So with a boxing glove, for example, having an 8-ounce glove on your hand really slows down the speed that the punch travels. So it's easier to see the punches coming in boxing. With a bare fist, the punch is on you like that. So it's harder to see the shots coming. It's harder to defend in bare knuckle. And because you're not wearing a glove, people get hurt a lot more seriously, a lot more quickly, which leads to a lot more knockouts. So in that respect, it's a much faster, shorter fight as well.
And then something that I think people don't realize is the ropes are actually steel.
In BKFC, yes, they have a circular ring and those are big steel pipes that are padded. So there's no give. You can't lean into the ropes and do the rope-a-dope like Ali. If you hit that thing, it's like hitting a brick wall. So you're stuck. In BYB, we have the Mighty Trigon, which is the world's smallest combat sports surface. I think it's 187 square feet. So there's not much space to move, which forces the action quite a bit, which will change the game as well. In my opinion, you really can't back up in BYB. It's not the move because you take two backward steps and you're in the corner.
Another reason that I think you touched on in a previous interview that I saw was it's faster to the top as well. In boxing, you have to, you know, take a lot of fights, kind of gradually work up, gather your points, whereas in BKFC and BYB, smaller competition, you become a world champion much quicker.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true. And then also because of the higher degree of superficial damage that you take from a bare fist, you know, guys have much shorter careers. You can't have a 30, 40, 50 fight professional career like a lot of pro boxers or some MMA fighters. You know, to have even 10 bare knuckle fights is astronomical. Right. So, yeah, you do definitely get to the top of the sport more quickly, but it comes at a cost because it's a lot more dangerous.
So how did the link up with Ian McCall happen?
So he actually grew up in Dana Point, California, which is a city I've lived in for quite a long time myself, on and off. So I've always known of Ian. I looked up to him as a young fighter, you know, coming from the same area as him, being a guy that fights in the lower weight classes. He was someone I really idolized and looked up to and admired as a fan of the sport coming up. And as I progressed through the sport, I came to know Ian and become a peer of his. And we developed a friendship. And it was after a while, I asked him to come on board and be a part of the team. And I couldn't be more thankful or more grateful to have him as a coach and a friend and a mentor. I'm really blessed to have that guy in my life, and I'm excited to continue to show off a lot of the things that we've been working on behind the scenes. So I definitely think he's added a lot to my game and improved my skill set, and it made me a much more dangerous fighter, especially for the bare knuckle game.
Some people that I've seen on social media that you've actually been sparring with, Chito Vera, Cub Swanson, a lot of the, you know, the top guys in California. What have you learned from people like Chito Vera and Cub Swanson?
From Chito, I definitely had to learn a lot about my own toughness, having to battle it out with that guy in the gym. He's a real animal. But it also gave me a lot of confidence training with him, knowing that, you know, if I can hang with that guy, you know, my opponents aren't going to stand a chance, because I'm never going to fight somebody as deadly and as terrifying in bare knuckle as Chito Vera. That guy is an absolute monster. So I definitely gained a lot of confidence training with him. Training with Cub Swanson, he runs a great group. He's got a small group of MMA fighters that he's bringing up that he trains with. And I've been fortunate enough to train with those guys. And they're very technical. And so definitely helped to add you know, some knowledge and some, you know, understanding a little bit more of the wrestling game, working with those guys, for which I've been very blessed as well. And I'm fortunate, you know, I live in Huntington Beach, California, which is a real mecca of combat sports. There's a lot of great gyms, Kings MMA, Huntington Beach Ultimate Training Center, got the Ruka Training Center over in Costa Mesa, one town over. So a lot of really world-class gyms, world-class fighters, and championship-level coaches as well has definitely been a huge benefit to my career, being here and getting to train with a lot of these guys and test myself against them.
Coming from the UK, what is it? You hear about Huntington Beach, and I think of the beach, the sun, you know, people with money. Same for Hawaii, picturesque place. People go there for the honeymoon and stuff like that. But then that you absolute killers come out of there. You've got the Huntington Beach bad boy, you know, Tank Abbott, Tito Ortiz. So, you know, why the huge, you know, wide range?
Well, there's definitely some really nice houses on the beach here in Huntington, but there's also some grittier neighborhoods as well. It's a little bit more of a blue collar community as far as the beach towns go here in Southern California. And as I always say, Huntington Beach fights. I tell people that all the time. The city of Huntington Beach fights. You don't want to walk around HB picking fights with strangers, because you never know when you might bump into a world champion MMA fighter or a kickboxer or a BJJ black belt and get your ass kicked, you know, at the bar for talking trash. It's a fight town. It always has been. I'm really proud to continue that legacy, that fighting legacy of Huntington Beach, you know, and I've been blessed to be surrounded by a lot of these guys. Like Tito Ortiz, who I got to be in camp with a little bit over at Ruka, training for my bare knuckle debut. Razor Rob McCullough, the inaugural WEC welterweight champion, is a longtime friend and peer of mine. And so these are all guys I definitely look up to and idolize. I jokingly like to refer to myself as the new Huntington Beach bad boy. And I'm proud to carry on that lineage and that legacy of great fighters coming from this town.
Did you ask Tito whether you can adopt that?
You know, I didn't ask for his blessing. Maybe I should. You know, he's actually not the first person to don that nickname. Tank Abbott was known as the original Huntington Beach bad boy, who was one of my my first favorite MMA fighters, watching his old highlights, you know, as a kid. And then Tito being the Huntington Beach bad boy. And so I like to fancy myself as the new Huntington Beach bad boy and carry on that tradition and that legacy as well.
So currently, you're Mark, the Shark Irwin. Where did the nickname the Shark come from?
You know, it's something my dad used to call me when I was a kid. And when I was having my first amateur fight, you have to fill out a form with your name, your weight, all your info. And it said nickname. And I didn't have one. And so I thought about it for a second. Mark the Shark. Boom. And it's been ever since. I like apex predators. I love sharks. You know, I'm living in Surf City. And I definitely try to emulate, you know, the nature of a shark when I'm in there hunting down my prey, you know, with ferocity and tenacity. You know, so I try to emulate and embody a lot of those characteristics as well.
Do you like to cross train? Do you think that would help you in bare knuckle?
Cross train as far as?
You know, kind of like a little bit of grappling, a little bit of MMA, and then kind of put all that together for like your own unique style?
Yeah, so, you know, having a boxing background initially, you know, that's definitely my style. But having started as late as I did, I think I developed a little bit of a messier sort of barroom style a little bit. And then bringing on Ian as my wrestling and MMA coach, working with MMA fighters, working in the clinch, adding some Brazilian jiu-jitsu to my training regimen, all definitely some of the adjustments that we've made. And, you know, I try to stick to what it is I do best. I don't want to deviate too far from that while still trying to incorporate some of these new techniques that we've been working on and developing in the gym.
So what's next? What's the next fight for you? Is there another fight date?
We don't have anything scheduled right now. Surgery is scheduled for August 9th, and then we'll be spending the next couple months rehabbing the injury. I'm hopeful to be able to start a training camp by the end of this year or early next year. So ideally, I would like to get back in there February or March of 2023. So that's where my plan is right now. That's my focus. And we're excited to get the surgery done and get into rehab and then be on to the next step. I'm hoping that when I return, I could step in and fight for the BYB title, or at the very least the title eliminator. I feel like my career merits that to this point. Initially for my last fight, we were talking about making it a title fight, but there wasn't an available opponent that the organization deemed worthy of fighting against me for that title. So we accepted the fight with YL Watson. He has since been given a replacement opponent. I'd love to fight the winner of that fight at the beginning of next year. And like I said, hopefully for a belt. So we'll see what happens.
When you first saw bare knuckle, did you expect it to explode like it is? It's like obviously the fastest growing sport.
You know, it doesn't surprise me that it's growing as fast as it is. I think over time, people in society only gets more extreme, you know, whether it's music, movies, things like that, everything. You know, we're always trying to push the envelope. If you watch a horror movie from 50, 60 years ago, it's not scary. You know what I mean? It's kind of jokey. Nowadays, you know, people are being mutilated and they're, it's horrific. It's hard to watch, right? You listen to music these days, we have death metal and hip hop and rap and a lot heavier, harder stuff than, you know, what they're listening to in the 30s and 40s and 50s. So I think as a society, we're always kind of pushing the envelope and trying to progress and see what's the newest, most extreme, hardcore thing. And so I think it's a natural fit. You see the progression from gloved boxing to MMA exploding onto the scene, and now bare knuckle being the next big craze. Honestly, it wouldn't surprise me to see bare knuckle continue to trend and bleed into other sports. We're starting to see bare knuckle MMA and King of the Streets, you know, no rules fights and things like that. So I actually expect that bare knuckle in the next couple of years will become a much more prominent and significant respected sport along with MMA and bare knuckle. And I think we'll continue to see more and more styles of combat sports adopt gloveless rules or, you know, less rules and things of that nature.
What did your friends and family say when you said that you were turned into bare knuckle? Because like you kind of touched on, I think people still think it's, you know, it's barbaric.
Yeah. Most people told me not to do it. Yeah, you know, but fortunately, you know, I don't listen to most people, and you can't tell me nothing. Honestly, I think the only people that really supported me and gave me the green light was really my father, which was, I was surprised by that as well. But he was the only person that told me to go for it if it's something I wanted to do. And him being someone that I really trust and respect, you know, I felt like the fact that he kind of signed off on it almost kind of felt like it was a sign of sorts, right? Like, he was the last person I expected to be on board with it. So if dad's co-signing it, like, screw it, let's go, let's do it. But yeah, everybody told me I was crazy. Everybody told me to stick with boxing, that I was going to get hurt. But I just, it only really motivated me more. You know what I mean? Because again, you can't tell me nothing. You tell me not to do something, and shoot, now I'm halfway, you know, feeling obliged to do it just in spite. So, yeah.
Do you think that being a boxing coach helps you? Because you kind of have to look at the spar, break it down, you know, work on the technique more because you're actually teaching it.
Sure, absolutely. Like they say, to teach is to learn twice. And, you know, being in a gym all the time certainly is beneficial as well. You know, I have no excuse. You know what I mean? I'm always there and able to get in a training session virtually any day. So it definitely is a benefit, I think, in certain respects. Ultimately, I would like to get to a point where I can earn enough from fighting that becomes my only career and my only job. You know, so we're working towards that goal as well. And then maybe look to get back to training athletes and fighters, you know, when my combat sports career is over.
Have you started to, or will you ever look at working with like a mental coach? Because we see more and more about athletes talking about the stress of the spar. Obviously, you know, Danny Garcia came out this weekend and was talking about how he was in a bad place recently.
You know, I think that of all my talents and abilities, I really believe that my mental game is probably my strongest asset that I have. You know, I never lack for confidence. I'm not easily spooked or shook out there. Like I said, you know, I'm always the happiest guy in the locker room before a fight, laughing and singing and dancing and screaming and having the time of my life. So, you know, there's always things to work on and improve, but that's probably the last thing that I would need help with. You know, like I said, we brought on MMA coaches, we brought on strength and conditioning coaches, people to help with nutrition and things like that. But I don't foresee myself needing a mental coach at this point. You know, it's not to say that I might never. But yeah, I don't lack for confidence. And I feel like my ability to believe in myself and to focus and to lock in is my best asset.
Do you use anything like meditation? I've known some boxers who are local to me that actually do a lot of meditation, especially when they're, you know, a few weeks out from a fight.
I'm really big on visualization. It's something that I like to practice a lot. And some of the places I really like to practice my visualization is in a hot yoga studio. And when I'm doing my road work, when I'm out there doing my runs, in my mind, I go into the fight and I picture my opponent. And I think about every possible scenario that could happen, good and bad. Me winning a fight with the first punch, you know, me going to war for 5 rounds, you know, me getting knocked down and hurt, whatever it is, I will imagine every single scenario that could possibly happen to me. And then I'll come up with a game plan on how I tend to proceed moving forward should I run into that situation. And by doing that, when I get to the fight on fight night, I've been in the ring with my opponent for hundreds and thousands of hours in my mind and in my mind's eye. And I've thought extensively about how I'll deal with each and every situation that might happen. So, you know, you could call that meditation, visualization, manifestation, whatever you want to call it. But that's definitely something I like to practice. One other thing I like to do that ties into that, believe it or not, I like to always get my fight posters printed and I'll put them up. I have a little Hall of Fame in my walk-in closet with my medals and trophies and things like that, all my posters. So I'll make a fight poster for my upcoming bout. And sometimes I'll spend time just staring at my opponent's face on the poster. So I get used to seeing what they look like, and I get comfortable staring at them and creating that mental picture and image of them in my mind so that I can better visualize the fight. And so that I'm not uncomfortable when I'm standing in front of that person eyeball to eyeball at the weigh-ins and the face-offs and, you know, on the scratch line in the ring, you know, because I've been here staring that guy down for hours and hours and hours in the weeks and months in the lead up to the fight.
Is that something that you decided to do? Is that something that you've, you know, gathered from somebody else, like Ian McCall, or, you know, someone that you'd look up to?
You know, I think I picked it up on my own, you know, as far as I'm aware. Like I said, it's just part of my process. It helps me visualize the fight that much better when I have a clear picture of what that person looks like in my mind. I'm definitely an analytical dude. So I like to spend a lot of time doing mental training, thinking about the fight, how I want to proceed, you know, what strategies and styles I want to implement. And you know, so I don't know exactly where I got it from, but I do, it is a big part of my preparation. And I do find it to be very beneficial.
Do you watch tape on opponents?
Absolutely. Yeah. My first ever boxing coach, Coach Hunter, a good friend of mine, he is my tape guy. So I'll find as much video as I can on my opponent. I'll send it to him and he'll come up with a breakdown of all their techniques and tendencies. And then we'll sit down and we'll watch their fights together and we'll discuss how we can take advantage of the mistakes that they make or the tendencies and the habits that they have. So for, you know, my last two fights, we were able to find a good amount of tape footage on my opponents, and it really helped us to break down their style. And so that we kind of knew what to anticipate and then how to attack and proceed.
What does a typical fight week look for you? Like how long before do you finish sparring? When's your last session? Do you have a special diet?
So as far as fight week, we'll usually stop sparring a week before the fight, maybe two if I'm a little banged up and I need a little bit more time to kind of let my body get fresh and feel good before the fight. But usually we'll stop sparring about a week in advance of the fight. And then it's pretty chill. You know, obviously we restrict our calories the most in that last week as we're, you know, slimming down to the fight weight. But other than that, you know, fight week is pretty chill. It's pretty mellow. Most of the work's, you know, been done. So now all you have to do is make weight, show up and finish the fight. So we just try to relax and enjoy the process and the experience and make sure that we're prepared for travel and everything that we're going to encounter when we get there.
How are you at cutting weight? Are you old school? Because we've seen, you know, some videos lately of like Cyborg. We had one this recently of Mo Mokaev from the UK doing a really drastic weight cut.
You know, I am not the most drastic weight cutter. I'm not a small 135 pounder by any means. You know, typically when I'm out of camp, I walk around at between 155 to 160 pounds. And then I'll cut down to 135 over the course of my training camp. So I'll break it down mathematically, but I like to kind of set it up where I need to lose about 1 to 2 pounds per week over the course of an 8 or 10 week training camp. And then I'll usually wake up within 1 to 3 pounds of my weight. For my bare knuckle debut, I woke up at 1 pound over. So I took a bath and that was it. For my BYB debut, I woke up at 139.2. So we went for a run and hit weight. Typically, I rehydrate to about 150 pounds. For my last fight, I rehydrated to 152. So I put on a good amount of size, but it's not real drastic. I don't take a lot of weight off the day of. I like to do it slowly over the course of a training camp.
Something that a lot of people talk about, you know, the comparison of boxing, MMA, bare knuckle. Do you worry about CTE, or do you believe that, you know, bare knuckle is actually better than boxing?
Well, I don't think it's ever good to get hit in your head. That's a fact, right? I know people like to argue that bare knuckle is somehow safer than gloved boxing. I don't know if that's true. quite frankly, I would guess just the opposite. I think it's much more dangerous. The likelihood of breaking bones and getting cuts, you know, the impact of the punches definitely stings a lot more when you get hit bare knuckle. The glove disperses a lot of that blunt force trauma. You know, I'm not a scientist. I haven't done any research on the matter. I wouldn't say that it doesn't concern me because obviously, you know, you only got one brain and one body and you got to take care of it. But at the same time, you know, you put it on the line every time you go in there. And we know that, you know, I accept the risks that I take. You know, I know that I could die every time that I get in there. It's just a fact. It's not something that a lot of people like to talk about. But, you know, I'm not going to try and deceive myself either. I'm real honest with myself when it comes to that sort of thing. So when I step through those ropes, I'm prepared and ready for whatever might come my way and whatever might happen to me. You know, obviously you prepare for the worst and you hope for the best. No one wants to get injured seriously or otherwise, but that's part of the game. And I love this sport. I love this journey that I've been on, getting to travel the country and the world, you know, attending all these big events for boxing, MMA, bare knuckle, you know, as whether it's, you know, in the audience as a special guest to the promotion, a coach or a fighter. It's, you know, I've never had more fun in my life than I have going around the country, going to these bare knuckle shows. And I wouldn't trade it for the world, you know. And if that means, you know, having to get knee surgery or, you know, breaking a bone or incurring some concussions, you know, obviously you never want that to happen. But, you know, if you're going to go swimming, you're going to get wet, you know, so you just accept it.
Do you have a bucket list of things that you want to achieve, you know, in your career, like, you know, fighting in at home in, you know, Huntington Beach, being a world champion, countries that you want to fight in?
Yeah, absolutely. Being a world champion is my top priority in the sport. You know, it's world championship or bust for me. And then getting to travel. That was one of the reasons I decided to go professional originally, is I wanted to have an opportunity to travel the world and to see new places, meet new people, and do cool shit, you know. And I've definitely gotten to do that. I've traveled all over the United States, from, you know, Kansas to Florida, you know, the South, all over, you know, fighting in foreign countries, you know, hanging out with famous fighters that I used to watch on TV, and now I'm in the locker room with them and going to the after parties with them. It's been a real crazy experience, and like I said, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Any, you know, famous fighters or anything that you actually got nervous when you met?
You know, I'm pretty used to it at this point. Sometimes I get a little nervous when I got to spar some of these killers, absolutely. And like I alluded to earlier, you know, I was a big fan of Ian McCall's before he ever became a friend of mine. So for a long time, you know, it was always kind of unusual hanging out with him and, you know, doing what we do. I used to catch myself sometimes like, oh, man, I'm hanging out with Uncle Creepy right now. Like, this is crazy. I used to look up to this guy as a kid, and now he's, you know, my big bro. But I don't really get starstruck anymore. I guess I'm used to it now, you know, and it's a lot of fun and a great experience getting to meet all these people that I've looked up to for so long and getting to be a peer of theirs and having them tell me that they're a fan of mine. That always blows me away. You know, that's always the most sincere compliment a person could pay me. So, yeah, really blessed to get to do this and be a part of this.
I assume whenever, you know, California decide to make it legal, main event, California, bare knuckle.
You know, I would absolutely love to, but I'm not going to hold out hope. The California State Athletic Commission is one of the most strict and stringent of all the athletic commissions in combat sports. I think that Las Vegas, Nevada, and California will be the two last commissions to ever legally implement bare knuckle. So I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon, but you never know.
What would you say, Mark, is the biggest misconception of being like a sports person like yourself? I'm sure everyone sees you on TV and they think five-star travel, he's just hanging out with celebrities, and they don't see all the work in the background.
Yeah, I think you know, one thing that people always tell me that, you know, I always think is funny, and I agree with them. You know, when you're a layman, just an average Joe, people always say, you know, you fighters are so nice. Like, they're all, people are always shocked at how friendly and, you know, warm fighters are. I think a lot of times there's a misconception that we're like these mean, you know, brutes and jocks and idiots. And it's really not the case. You know, fighters really are a lot of times the nicest people you'll ever meet in the world. And so I think that's probably the biggest misconception, is that fighters can be nice and that they're not a bunch of jerks that will beat you up if you look at them wrong.
What would you say is the biggest thing that could happen over the next 5 years for you? Like, in a perfect world, 5 years from now, where is Mark Irwin?
In 5 years from now, hopefully I won the world championship, made a couple good paydays, and then used these opportunities and these platforms as a means by which to create a life after fighting. So starting my own business. I'm currently in the process of developing my own whiskey business. That's something I'm really passionate about. I love bourbon and rye whiskeys. I'm a big old fashioned guy. And when I'm not in camp, I love drinking them. So that's something I would love to do. I'd love to open my own gym and to work as a coach with high level fighters in the sport of boxing, bare knuckle, and MMA. And then one other thing I'd really like to do after my career is over is I'd love to officiate at a high level as well, being a judge or a referee for world championship fights in boxing, MMA, or bare knuckle. I feel like there's a real lack of experienced fighters working in those positions. And I think it would be hugely beneficial to the sport and to the fighters to have former fighters working in those roles, because you could be as big a fan as you like, but at the end of the day, if you've never been in there and you've never done it, you'll never really truly understand exactly what is going on and what those fighters are thinking and feeling. Right? I can tell better than most when a fighter is hurt, when a fighter is in trouble, because I know, because I've been there, you know, so I can recognize it a lot more easily. And I think that would be a great, you know, thing that I could do for the sport in a great way that I could impact it once my fighting days are over, is to try and be the best referee and the best judge that I could be, you know, because we hear it every weekend about how this fighter got ripped off, or that referee stopped the fight too soon or too late, and this fighter got hurt or seriously injured, you know. So I'd love to be a positive force on the sport, you know, when I'm no longer in there fighting myself.
Why do you think fighters don't do that?
It's a good question. You know, I think especially with MMA, you know, because it's such a new sport that a lot of the guys getting out of it, I think we are starting to see that. Frank Trigg, I know, is doing a lot of refereeing at a high level. Chris Lieben is working as an official here in California at a lot of local events. So I think it's starting to trend. And, you know, I love that. Like I said, fighters can have a real positive influence on the sport outside of it after their career is over, and they can better help protect the fighters that are coming up behind them to make it a safer sport and to make sure that, you know, people aren't getting ripped off or screwed over because of a bad call or a bad scorecard.
One question, Matt, that I always like to finish on. What would you tell somebody that's listening to this that wants to follow in your footsteps?
That's a great question. I think, you know, if you're serious about it and it's something that you're passionate about, I always encourage people to go for it. You know, I've been in this sport competing for a decade now as an amateur and as a professional. And there's so many talented fighters that you'll meet in the gym. And a lot of times, you know, they talk themselves out of it because it's a daunting proposition. Fighting is scary, you know, and you can get seriously hurt, and it's hard to make any money doing it. You know, it's like becoming a famous actor. You know, a lot of people will tell you to stay in school and to pick a more, you know, responsible career. But all of my favorite people on this earth are the crazy ones and the wild ones that have always kind of, you know, gone their own way and done it their own way. And, you know, you only get one life. So I encourage anybody, if it's something that you're passionate about, whether it's fighting, singing, acting, whatever, don't let anybody deter you from chasing your dream. Just because other people don't have the courage to chase it doesn't mean that you should too. You know, I tell people all the time, I want to do rock star shit. I want to travel the world, party with celebrities and supermodels, beat people up on TV for money, and do epic shit, you know? And I've been doing that to this point. I want to keep doing it. And, you know, I couldn't be more, you know, grateful for the opportunities that I've had. And I couldn't be more proud of myself for putting myself out there and chasing after this dream. And so that's been my experience. And so I always try to encourage people that if you have that burning desire in your heart, don't let anybody try and take that away from you, because a lot of people will.
And if you want to tell everybody that's listening where they can find you on social medias, any businesses, any sponsors you want to shout out?
Yeah, absolutely. You guys can find me on Instagram at MarkTheSharkIrwin. That's Mark_the_shark. Right. And then you can find me on TikTok, MarkTheSharkIrwin. Shout out to my sponsors, CBD Health Solutions, Space Weights, Kessler's Family Wellness, the OC Fight Doc. Shout out to Dr. Kessler for always taking good care of me. Massage Matters, Sean Topper, my tattoo sponsor. Shout out to him, one of the best tattoo artists in the world. Boss Cat Kitchen and Libations, they always throw my after parties. You know, bless them. They just opened a new location in Irvine. Check them out, Boss Cat Kitchen and Libations in Irvine, California. And to any of my sponsors I forgot, I apologize. I love you guys all very much. Thank you for having me on your podcast. It's been a pleasure. I always love doing this. If you ever want to have me back, let me know. I'd be happy.
And we are at TLRMMA on Instagram and Twitter. And catch us next time. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Last Round MMA Podcast. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and interviews. In the meantime, follow The Last Round MMA on Twitter and Instagram at TLRMMA.